I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Absolutely delighted to be joined by Wasps second row, Matt Simons. Matt Simmons, how are you, mate?
Either or is fine. Yeah, good. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Great to finally catch up with you. We've been trying to do this for a week or so.
Yeah, technology, not my strongest suit. We got there in the end.
Exactly.
Minus the beast from the east.
Oh, yeah. How is the weather down by you?
Yeah, terrible. Literally terrible. It's like north of the wall. Yeah, I'm locked in. I live with Villa LaRue. We're like locked in. I ran out for a Nando's earlier, and that's lasted us all day.
You're living with Mr. LaRue?
I am. Yeah, I am. Keeps me out of trouble.
How is that?
I keep him out of trouble.
How's that working out for you?
Yeah, good. I'm picking up Afrikaans slowly. He has a lot of FaceTimes, a lot of calls, a lot of shouting, lekker lekker. But I'm getting there.
Excellent. So, what have you been doing with your day then? You were down in London yesterday, were you not?
I was, yeah, got back just before the weather fully caved in. Just did a bit of work outside of rugby, trying to keep the brain ticking over. Day off today. So we haven't done much at all. I thought we'd be able to get out of the house and the roads would be all right. But Leamington Spa has shut down for the afternoon, evening.
Now, Leamington, not that rugby fans want to listen to this geography knowledge, but Leamington... it's actually one of the nicest little towns that you'll come across, which nobody knows about.
I think it is voted nicest place to live in the UK.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning, isn't it?
Fact. Yeah, there's not too much here, as I'd say. Like, lads are a little bit critical, the ones who haven't bought houses here. But it's just, I think it was a tough adjustment for the lads who come up from London.
Yeah.
The bright lights. And then come up here to a slightly smaller places hasn't been great for the outside of the activities outside of rugby that way.
Well, just judging by your accent there, you don't sound like you're from Leamington. So where are you originally from, Matt?
Yeah, it's an amalgamation of accents. It's a weird one. I'm from North London. Mm-hmm. Essex originally, and then finished university, went straight to New Zealand, spent nearly 4 years there, and I just can't shift it. Just can't shift the twang. It's really annoying.
Yeah, there is.
I reckon it's all right if you spend like a bit of time over there, like, you know, do a gap year, this, that, and the other, a few other Brits. But because I was kind of immersed in it, it just won't go. And I was saw Jimmy Gopper for lunch earlier, and it just comes back.
Yeah, I bet.
It's really bad. Yeah, and Piers Francis got the twang of, I can hear. I saw him interview the other day, and I can hear a similar little twang.
Yeah, it also means that you're pretty good at rugby too, so you can sort of keep it.
I don't know about that. I lucked out a bit, I think. Yeah, just right place, right time.
So give me a bit of background about how a young Englishman ends up in New Zealand.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird little journey. I played rugby when I was a kid, and then got to 18, didn't make any kind of Southeast trials or anything like that. Just no academy contract. I was spent a bit of time at Saracens, but I was there for a couple of months and that didn't really work out. So then I did a rowing program for the Olympics in 2012 called World Class Start. I think it's still going, or it's in a different format, but they basically tested a load of tall blokes, tall girls, did a load of fitness testing, strength testing, and kind of got on this program. So did that. That was based out of Reading. Went to university there. Did that for 5 years. Ended up getting... compartment syndrome, my forearms, had to retire.
Oh, from rowing?
From rowing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, right, I might as well take this, all this training I've done, and try and channel it into rugby. So the nearest club was Esher. Surrey. So they were in the Championship at the time. Started in their like academy Colts team, and then kind of worked my way up. Played first team at Esher in the Championship. Sadly, we got relegated that year, and then I was looking at options. Spent a week at Leicester Tigers near the end of my finals. Nothing came of that. And then I was like, right, screw it. Finished my last exams, and my little brother spent some time over in New Zealand, made some calls, and I just literally booked a flight, went straight to Christchurch, just got a job, played club rugby, team called Old Boys, who were one of the top sides there. Aaron Major was the head coach, with Ruben Thorne, who's another All Black, who was forwards coach and was playing with me in the second row.
So,
and just kind of went from there.
Was Aaron Major coach when you were there?
Yeah, he was our head coach of the club side. And then Nathan Major was his brother, who was also another coach, and Ruben Thorne. So it was pretty Galactico squad. And the way they work over there with club rugby is that if those Super Rugby boys aren't playing, say for the Crusaders, and they're playing club rugby.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to have boys drop down all the time, and you get like, I think that's the beauty of it. Like, lads just love playing rugby. So they're more than happy to drop down. You know, we had All Blacks playing with us, and then you've got like guys who are just working, electricians, construction workers.
Love that.
Bloody good rugby players, but they're just kind of, it's a real amalgamation of backgrounds, and everyone just rolls out and gets stuck in.
Yeah, now I've spoken to a few lads from Leicester, and they all absolutely love Aaron Major. What was he like to work with?
Yeah, awesome. Really good. Really, like, I don't think he's probably changed that much. I don't think you can, but I mean, he was really welcoming to me, really friendly to start with, and that was a big thing for me. I hadn't really had that from a coach who was that kind of, you know, happy for you to be there, and just really took me under his wing. Same with Ruben, and very detailed. We had a really clear structure, clear game plan. Even playing club rugby, we knew exactly where we needed to be, and we kind of took care of the detail, and as well as the physical confrontational side of things. It was great. I couldn't speak more highly about him, and I couldn't speak more highly about that, about the system really over there.
Yeah, I've got a feeling Aaron Major is going to be back with a vengeance this year.
Oh, the Highlanders, yeah, they've got a good little setup there with Glenn Delaney, who coached me as well at London Irish. So I spoke to him actually after the win. Who'd they play down there in the Old Blues? After that game, and he said he's loving it, and he was at Canterbury as their head coach there, and he's worked with a few of those boys before who I've played with and live with. There's some great guys, and they've built a really good culture. I mean, all those Kiwi teams will have a good culture, but I think there's something special down there at the Highlanders.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I've actually interviewed Glenn before, and he's very, 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 very knowledgeable. Just give you like a measure of the man. I play club rugby up in Manchester, really quite low level, about level 8, and I think people naturally gravitate to people who will give up their time. Glenn actually spent the best part of an hour with me on the phone talking about lineouts, primarily just because he just loves lineouts.
Yeah, don't get me started, honestly. Well, I think there's quite a few guys like that. It's one of those parts of the game where if you're a little bit geeky, if you're a little bit if you're quite analytical, if you like that side of things, then you can really get stuck into it. And with the amount of kind of research you can do and putting together new moves and structures, and it's an avenue to be able to do that in. And there's not many other parts of the game where you can get that kind of are creative but also analytical.
Yeah. So where do you fall on the rugby autism scale then?
I'd say I've mellowed with age. You know, I've realized, for me, it's you can overanalyze things, and I used to watch a lot of tape, and I've definitely kind of mellowed off now and got a bit more of a balance to the working week.
And it's part of that just because, you know, when you've watched that much tape, you've kind of seen it all before anyway.
Kind of, and then you also realize that sometimes you can do all the analysis in the world, but things just happen on a rugby pitch. Things change, and for me, you can get, you know, you lose a couple of lineouts, it can kind of eat away at you a little bit, and you're like, you know, you can ponder it all game and for the rest of the week. So sometimes stuff just happens.
So tell me, you moved on to New Zealand then. Now, was that purely just for rugby, or were you thinking of something else? Were you thinking of going to work out there and follow a career?
No, it was for the rugby. I just thought if I've got one crack at playing professionally, mm-hmm. then I've kind of exhausted my options here unless I stick it out in the championship. And I didn't want to do that. I thought, from having conversations with my little brother, who was at Leicester at the time, and some other people, I thought, I'm going to take the gamble and go over there and try and carve something out. And to be honest, the best I hoped for was to play Premiership grade in Christchurch.
Yeah.
And then I thought, from there, right, if Aaron Major and Ruben Thorne are there, then if I'm playing well, then possibly I could get a recommendation or a reference and then come back here and try and open the door at a Premiership club. I didn't see it as anything further than that.
I see. So what's the progression then? So you're in Old Boys, and
yeah.
is Old Boys one below Super Rugby, or do you go to, like...
No.
Is it Mitre Klep or whatever it is now?
Yeah. So it was the ITM Cup at the time. It was Mitre 10 Cup.
That's the one. Yeah.
So... yeah, basically you're playing club rugby mm-hmm. in your region, wherever it is, Auckland, Christchurch, Wellington, out in the middle of nowhere in Hawke's Bay, at the same time that Super Rugby's going on.
Yeah.
So there's no chance of you really jumping into a Super Rugby team at that point, but those Super Rugby players who are surplus to requirements on a Saturday will drop down and play club rugby.
I'm with you.
On a Saturday, okay. And then from that, when you're playing club rugby, the national provincial coaches are watching, so the Mitre 10 Cup coaches are watching, and they've pretty much got the core of their squad, but they might be looking for another scrum half or a lock or a back rower, and they're kind of looking, well, they're looking all over, but they're predominantly looking in their regions, and Christchurch is probably, up with Auckland, the strongest kind of region for club rugby.
Yeah. So tell me, what kind of basis, out of interest, does rowing give you for rugby in terms of fitness?
I think I'm better off 60 minutes in than I am 20 minutes in to the game. I feel better then. I think it's not so much, there's not that much crossover. Like, it took me a long time to get used to the stop-start, anaerobic kind of nature of rugby.
Yeah.
But I knew how to train. Mm-hmm. I knew how to train. I knew how to kind of screw myself over. So I used that a lot. And I mean, I did a lot of weights. I ate a lot of roast chicken. I did when I was at uni. I was like 100 kilos when I was rowing. Played the championship. I was about 110. And then now I'm 124.
Wow.
So, and I was playing, well, I was playing Super Rugby at about 117, 118. So it's, and now I hardly eat, really. I've got to be really careful. Like, my body weight just holds. It's funny how everyone's different, but our body's adapted to it. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, really weird.
How interesting. So you arrive over in New Zealand. You're physically fit. You're pretty.
Yeah.
You're pretty strong. What more was added to your game then when you start playing over there?
Coaching. It's like so much coaching. I was so raw. So I was working. I had a couple of really tough like jobs that were. Just that one was packing yogurts in a freezer works, which was pretty gritty. And then I've managed to land on my feet. I've got a really good job, well, it was a really flexible job with the Earthquake Commission. So I was basically just driving around the truck, just absolute smoke and mirrors, not really doing much at all, fixing a couple of buildings. And I'm not practical at all.
Yeah.
But they were great with my rugby. So they used to, and then basically I played a couple of good, like, all right games for Old Boys. And Scott Robertson, Razor, who's the Crusaders head coach, was Canterbury head coach. He was coming into the, he was forwards coach at Canterbury at the time, my first club season, and he asked me to come along and basically hold tackle bags at training, Canterbury training.
Yeah.
So I just jumped on that, and then basically Ruben, so I was doing that kind of ITM Cup training, mm-hmm. and then Ruben took me under his wing, and he used to run, they have like an IHP, International High Performance Unit at the Crusaders, so they get a lot of international players, like foreign players, come over and train, and Ruben would run the forwards. And at the time it was Johnny Gray, and they had Finn Russell,
really?
Sam Algo Klein. Yeah, they were all over on this scholarship. So they spent 3 months there. And so like, I was playing against Johnny, and he was playing for Sydenham. I was playing for Old Boys. He was like 18 at the time.
Okay.
And then we trained together and do like high ball catching, restart work, scrummaging technique, line out stuff with Ruben like in the afternoons after work.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so like and it's at Rugby Park, and that's kind of under the eyes of all the coaches, and it's just a lot more. You know, they're looking out their big windows, they can see who's on the pitch, and my thought was I'll just be on the pitch every day, like, and just say yes to everything I could, and thankfully work were really accommodating.
That's
I guess typical New Zealand, typical Christchurch, just love their rugby. So
why do you think
more
there's not
obliging?
Why do you think that there's not a system like that in England?
Playing numbers and the structures in place. I think it's getting tougher and tougher. They've got for guys to come through the championship, come through different avenues. I'm actually going to write a little article on it in the coming weeks, but which is wrong in my opinion. I think we've got to keep an avenue open for those players who are late developers.
Yeah,
who haven't come down the normal route, and also the guys who. You're coming through the championship, because I'm looking at my WASA team now and some of the top performers this year, like guys called Tom Cruise.
Macclesfield.
He's probably one of our top. Yeah, there's loads of them. Ben Harris playing really well.
Josh Bassett.
Reader, who's just done his knee, but I mean, there's a lot of them, and Guy Thompson. We've got to keep a clear avenue open rather than just picking these guys up at 15, 16 through the school system.
Yeah,
get dropped into the academies and. Aren't exposed to some of those gritty characters that are floating around the championship, because if you ever see Cruzy train, you know what I mean. He's he never goes less than 100%, and that's probably because of all the years he spent grinding it out in the champ.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because one of the things I talk about, and people are so bored of me talking about it now, is lack of playing opportunity for lads that have been signed to, say, a Sale Sharks or Wasps or wherever they are,
yeah,
and just getting no A-team games because the A-team basically doesn't exist. And I think, what are these lads actually doing? Yeah, you're training, but if you're not playing games, you're not improving.
Yeah, 100%, couldn't agree more. I think we've kind of... Well, the squad size is a tricky one. You compare it to... I mean, let's say the Crusaders, right now, the Crusaders team, say there's 35 guys in comparison to Wasps, there's 45.
Yeah.
But from that 35... Obviously, you've got your injuries, but what they'll do is they'll call guys in who are playing club rugby.
Yeah.
So, and then those guys will just drop straight into that squad. And so they're playing every week. And so are the guys who aren't in that 23. They're playing club rugby every week. And they're more than happy to do that. They prefer to play for their club sides with their mates. And some of them fly. Like when I was at the Chiefs, they would fly from Hamilton down to Nelson.
What?
Or down to Christchurch on a Friday to play for their club side, because that's where their mates are, that's where their families play, that's where their dads played, and that's where their connection is. But they don't want to be in the gym pumping weights and being like looking after themselves. They want to play rugby, because that's the only way that's all they know. And that's one thing. That's one of the biggest differences I find. I find like over here, you talk to like some of the senior academy lads, and they're like, "Oh no, I don't want to go there. I don't want to be on loan there. I don't want to do that." And it's like, "Yeah, but you're not going to get better doing 10 sets of bench press. It's not. That's not rugby."
Do you know what I think is sort of energy sapping for lads? Because we've got quite a steep pyramid. So you know, if for instance at 33 I made it to the Leicester Tigers team, unlikely at this point, but you know we're holding out hope.
Never say never.
Exactly, mate. But they weren't playing me this week. My home team or my club team at the moment is like level 8. And I just think that the pyramid system in England is so steep that you couldn't go back to your club. And then you've got to be fed off to another club which you've got no affinity to. And actually, I think when players step down a level in England, it's seen as a bit of a kick in the shins rather than going back and playing with your mates.
I mean, there's just different ways to skin a cat. I understand... If say an academy lad, 21, like he's on loan and then gets drafted back to his premiership side and then doesn't know the team structures, doesn't know the lineouts, gets honed out in training because he doesn't know his core roles where he should be, and that's a detriment to him on the Saturday playing for his premiership side. But there's got to be a bit of middle ground here, I think. I think there's a reason. Southern Hemisphere, specifically New Zealand teams, have such a high skill set.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone can rip Super Rugby out of having poor D, this, that, and the other, and the score lines. But until you've played it, until you've realised how screwed you are after 60 minutes, until you've seen some of the offloads and how quickly they move the ball and how quickly they pick off the tight five, then you can't really talk, because it honestly is, I've never been as fatigued playing the Premiership as I have been over there, despite all the mauls, despite all the scrums. It's just different. Like, once you hit the wall over there, you're toast. Whereas over here, you can take a knee, you can kind of, you can grind it out the last 20 or so. And yeah, that's, you know, it's to do with the pitches, to do with the conditions, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's just a bit of a different game. But
I'd be interested to know your opinion on this, because every time I watch Super Rugby, especially the New Zealand teams, it looks like it's -2 and there's, you know, sideways rain. And then everyone says, oh, well, the conditions and the pitches there are great. I'm thinking, well, are they?
No, they're not. But we train accordingly. Like, we'd soak a ball in fairy liquid before training.
Really?
So like they dunk the ball in a bucket of fairy liquid, and we do like KBA drills, like keep the ball alive. So, and with a gauntlet, with pad, like they're, then we do offload drills every week. But the flip side of that is we'd compromise. We wouldn't spend anywhere near the amount of time that we'd say we spend at Wasps on our driving defense.
Yeah.
You know, so there's only so many hours of the week, and there is a flip side to, you know, doing 10 minutes of offloading drills, is that you spend ten less minutes mauling, scrummaging,
yeah,
like doing that stuff. So, and the maul D in New Zealand is not as good as it is over here by quite a long way. So, you know, I'm not saying everything's great over there, and you know they don't do anything. Everything they do over there is better than it is here. Not at all. It's just focus is slightly different.
I see. So when did it become a little bit more clear to yourself that you were going to be pretty good in the New Zealand style of the game? Because, you know, you must have had an inkling.
I could run. I wasn't the strongest by any means. I can still barely bench press 140 kilo. I was never a freak in the gym, but I could run.
Yeah.
And I put out some pretty good yo-yo scores quite early on. And I think that's something as a type 5 forward kind of stands you in good stead over there. And I mean, I was a lot lighter. I don't really know, mate. It just kind of, I just thought, oh, I've got an opportunity here, I'll just work as hard as I can. And then I was out of my depth the whole time. So I captained the Crusader Knights, like the Crusaders development side.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even played ITM Cup. And I was like, Owen Franks was in my side and I'm captaining him. And I was like, oh my God. I had said to Scott Robertson, I was like, mate, I was like, what am I doing here? Like, I haven't even got an ITM Cup contract, and you put me in. Like, there were some moments I was,
yeah,
yeah, I was fully out of my depth.
Did you call him Mr. Franks?
I didn't say a word to him. He didn't say a word to me.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, am I right in thinking that you captained the Chiefs at some point?
Yeah, so that was a similar one. It kind of like I done my first year at the Chiefs, all good, and then for Dave Rennie, a big focus of for him was having a leader through pre-season, or a leadership group through pre-season. And
yeah.
So I just got called in one day. He's like, mate, do you want to be pre-season captain? Like, up until the All Blacks come back. And I was like, yes, sweet. Like, you know, I'm not going to say no. Got some good other lads around me. It just kind of happened. And then just we bounced a few ideas off each other during pre-season, because those All Black guys don't get back.
I'm with you.
Until end of February.
And which
February?
Were the, just trying to think now, when you were there, who were the All Blacks in your squad? Sonny Billard was not there
Sonny
at that
Bill
time.
Was there in my second year.
Oh, he was,
yeah, he
okay.
Was my second year, yes. We had Liam, Messam, Brody, Talik, yep. Sam Kane, wow. Aaron Cruden, Charlie Nartai, Brad Weber's got a couple of caps. Trying to think, Anton Lennett Brown.
Yeah.
Trying to think who's been capped now that wasn't capped at the time. Yeah, there's a few.
Is Damien McKenzie at Chiefs?
Yeah, yeah, big Jim. Yeah, he was there. He's tough. He's a tough kid.
Is he?
I've got a lot of time for him. Yeah, he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, he's an incredible player. But I'd never describe him as tough though. I mean, what makes you say that?
Well, he's 80 whatever he is kilos just about, and we do tackling drills, and he'd just take the biggest guys. Like, Tamifuna was there at the time, Jamie McIntosh, who's at Post, still, like, he'd just throw himself into anything.
Do you know, funnily enough, I was listening to David Flatterman do his podcast. He was talking about the toughest players that he... the players that he perceives as the toughest in the Premiership. And the one he said, which blew my mind, was George Ford, because he's so small and yet he just tackles over and over. It might not be dominant, but he keeps on getting up and doing it again, and everyone's trying to whack him.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think in my team who I'd think. Yeah, it's not, and there's more to tough than mental toughness. I think a lot of things behind the scenes that we see that guys play through, and how they train and their attitude towards certain things is different often to what is seen on television. You don't see everything that goes on behind the scenes, and who's playing with injections, who's, you know, really putting their body through the mill for their mates. So there's some tough characters out there.
Yeah, just going off topic a second, when you said playing with injections, I've got a funny feeling, you know, that's going to be the next rugby scandal.
What, local anaesthetics?
Yeah, basically.
Nah, this is where I'll probably sell myself down the river, but I think that's pretty commonplace. What it was back in, well, I've played with a fair few in my time, in AC joints. Shoulders.
It's a tricky one, right? Because depending on what you're having, there does become a certain tolerance to painkillers, and there's a lot of players playing on painkillers who don't necessarily need them. But you know, the more you take, the more you need. And I think you look at it in American sports, there's a lot of guys that finish the game or whatever sport that they're in, and life isn't particularly rosy for them.
I can tell you there has been a massive clampdown in every change room that I've been in recently.
Is there?
Yeah, huge. Yeah, they won't give out anything. And you've got to be... they're very, very strict. It's not... I mean, I can't speak for every team, and there's probably some lads out there listening laughing. But, from what I've seen, they've really clamped down on some stuff.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the flip side to what I just said is rugby is pretty good when it comes to... You know, identifying things. I mean, I'll give you an example, concussion. I mean, I don't remember concussion being a huge issue for the last 20 years, but all of a sudden it is. And they've reacted, proportionately, I would say.
Yeah, I think obviously that stemmed from the NFL lawsuits. And I mean, but you look at football recently, the recent articles coming out on that, and Alan Shearer's documentary. It's not just rugby, it's kind of, you know, there's a few sports that are really addressing it now.
Yeah. Just going back to the Chiefs, and let's just quickly talk about Dave Rennie, because anyone who has attempted rugby coaching must have gone on YouTube and must have found Dave Rennie's coaching videos. He's quite some guy.
He is, yeah. He's the man. Probably had one of the coaches that had the most influence on my career. Believed in me a lot, and I owe him a lot, really.
Now, there is a video of him, and one of the things he's saying is everything that we do with the Chiefs is basically we'll always have a go from anywhere.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we'll basically play two phases before working out what to do. Is that bravado, or did he actually do that?
Yeah, Arteta is a type 5 forward. It breaks me when I see one of them tapping and going, or what used to, or quick throw-ins, or we used to have a call called Find It, whereby, let's say, we get awarded a penalty near halfway, especially against the big African sides.
Yeah.
And they turn their backs and get a blow on and all kind of huddle up thinking you're kicking for touch. And one of the back three players would call Find It.
Oh, nice.
Tap and go. So they're going to tap and go quick, like look, faking the kick to touch, tap, and then get it two passes wide. And normally we'd either score or we'd, you know, we'd get pretty close to it. But as a tight five forward, you're in the middle of the park, hanging out your ass, thinking, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
That's the difference is, whereas over here, that wouldn't happen. So you get a chance to get a breather, a kick for touch, reset, and then you kind of be into your work again. But over there, if you look at some of the length of passages of play, because they're always looking for that quick option, because they know they back their conditioning and they back the fact that they're going to, that defence is going to make a poor read because they're fatigued.
Now, that's sort of an interesting point on conditioning. Now, England obviously, well, they're not, I don't know if they're in camp at the moment. They might have actually disbanded for a few days.
Some of them are, I think. Yeah, some of them are.
But
Joe's back at
Wasps,
I think. Yeah, he's training his arse off, but yeah, he's back.
So, from a fitness point of view, I mean, I can't imagine there's many lads fitter than the lads that play at the Viva. And if there are fitter lads, maybe it's in England. How does the actual fitness side compare? Because there's only so far you can push a human body, as I think we found out on Saturday, actually.
Oh, I don't know about that. You should go talk to. I used to run. You should talk to my mates who are trying to go to Tokyo at the moment. They are pushing the limits. It's absolute madness.
Really?
But oh, yeah. Like there was a guy. Yeah, there's some serious boundaries being pushed. Some guys who are really struggling. Glandular fever, all kinds. They're a mad bunch, those lot. But in terms of rugby, yeah, I mean, no doubt. Never played international rugby. Can't vouch for it, but I assume it's another level up on either Super Rugby or Premiership or Champions Cup, so full credit to them. I think anyone playing that standard's got to be a certain level of fitness, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, because you know, without making any judgments on the England team, but the fact that they're doing a miniature pre-season in the middle of the domestic season before the Six Nations blows my mind. I can't imagine how much fitter they can get than a bunch of international players mid their domestic season.
I can't speak to that environment. I'm sure a certain amount of it is psychological.
Do you reckon?
Well, I think you'd like to go in with the perception that you're the fittest side.
I think
mentally that is huge. Because you're both, you know, like, obviously, you haven't played it, can't tell you. But if we're playing a big game, let's say, you know, you're playing the Chiefs, extra Chiefs, you'd like to think that 50 minutes in, you've got one up over them. Even though you might not at all, you know, if you were going to run against your opposing number, he might beat you in a yo-yo test or beat you in a fitness test, whatever it is. But mentally, if you have the perception that you're fitter,
yeah,
you'll be able to dig that a little bit deeper, and that's half the game, really, the mental side of it.
Now, earlier on in the interview, you said that you went to New Zealand to sort of build a bit of a CV. You must be pretty happy with how the CV was building when you're pre-season captain at Chiefs. When did interest from back home start filtering through to you?
Good question. I lose track of dates now. It was... So I think I met up with London Irish in my first year.
Yeah.
Glenn Delaney came over. I think that was my first year. And then I said no. I said, oh, I'm going to stick it out here and have a crack. And then towards the end of pre-season, in my second season, just before the Super Rugby started, I found out that Tom Coventry was going over to Irish.
Got you.
Going back to the UK. And he asked, would I be interested in going? And I'd spoken to Graham Rowntree, who was over in June 2014 for that England tour.
Yeah.
I'd caught up with them in Auckland. Not, you know, just a general chit-chat. Nothing more than that. No promises or anything. And I was kind of weighing it up. I'd been over there a long time. family, friends, and I was like, let's see what's on the table.
I see. So, did you go to the first New York game with London Irish?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah.
That was tremendous fun. We covered that with Egg Chasers.
Did you?
Yeah, we went to the Irish consulate the day before the game, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, they are mad for it. It's going to be interesting. I was just speaking to Greg McWilliams, actually, on the phone, who is the USA, the Irish guy, who's the USA attack coach, backs coach, and he's DOR at Yale. So I went over there last June. Yeah, I went over there last June and caught up with him there, because Yale used to have a partnership with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So they'd send in New Zealand, they'd send some coaches over and they'd send some players over, and they play club rugby and had a partnership there. So I met Greg there and stayed in touch, and he invited me over last June in the off season break. So headed over there and realised, because when we stayed over there with Irish, we were out in New Jersey. We were training at the Jets facility, which is insane, but we were right out of sticks, so we never really get to go into Manhattan much.
Yeah.
So when I went over there in June and caught up with Matt McCarthy, who runs the Rugby Wrap-Up Show.
Yeah, yeah, I've been on that.
Which is an awesome little venture, and a few of the old blue guys, and some of the rugby, some of the Eagle boys who are working in the city now. It was awesome, and you just realise that something's brewing, and there's a lot of interest. There's actually quite a lot of rugby knowledge in New York.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's a lot of them, but they're fairly sparse just because of the sheer size of it. But when you do find a group of lads that love it, I mean, it's like a cult.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's like 1 degree of separation. Within that rugby network, everyone knows everyone, and it's funny. You get guys who come over from playing semi-pro in the UK who've, let's say, gone into recruitment, played some club rugby. That network is phenomenal. Those guys are in some really successful roles in their respective industries, and then playing club rugby, and it's kind of gone hand in hand. Mm-hmm. That kind of network.
Yeah, I mean, we were lucky enough when we went over last time, we went for the Saracens Newcastle game. We were hosted by, do you know what, if I can't remember their name, do you know what? I've got their keyring and their shirts and everything, and I can't remember.
New York Athletic Club?
No.
Where was it? It was
in New Jersey. How? Bayonne Bombers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they've moved their game to a Friday for us to have a quick kickabout with the second team, which was awesome. So it is a cool little community there.
Yeah, and they've got a big rugby charity going on called Play Rugby USA. It's about. Which I went to. It's run by an English guy.
Oh, okay.
Actually, and it's all about kind of bringing rugby to some of the poorer areas of New York. It's produced some like incredible athletes.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
They've discovered through the program. Yeah.
Well, we were playing against a team out there who had basically produced all. So most of the New York teams are obviously expats, but the team that we played against, I can't remember their names, they'd got most of their teams actually from their under 8s and, you know, from under 14s, so on and so forth. They're basically homegrown, a whole club, which is brilliant to see.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's the beauty of rugby.
Any interest from you maybe to go over to the States when it develops a bit more?
Possibly. Who knows? I had a chat with Connor Murphy, who used to be at London Irish, in like the academy scrum half.
Yeah,
he's a bloody good player, and then went over there to Houston SaberCats. So I spoke to him maybe a couple of months ago now. Did a little blog on it, just about the MLR and how he sees it going and the potential. And he was just couldn't say enough good things about Houston and the rugby and like the people and how he sees it going. And it was pretty exciting. I just spoke to Greg, and I said, what do you think, mate? Do you reckon it's going to stick? And he's like, yeah, 100%. They've just got a sustainable model built now, and they've had enough engagement. And, I mean, there's just geographically, it's
a
completely different beast to the UK. You know, like, we're travelling to Gloucester, be home in an hour. you've got to fly from Houston up to Seattle. You know, it's just the cost involved.
Yeah. So
it's a different beast.
Oh, it's...
But hopefully, fingers crossed, it's good for everyone.
Absolutely, and it's also a great place to visit on your rugby tours.
Yeah, I'm planning a little trip back in June.
Excellent. So, Let's just fast forward a bit over to Irish. I mean, I'll be pretty direct with this. Why do you think that Tom Coventry didn't work there, work too well there? Because he's got a really good record back at the Chiefs, and it just didn't seem to settle for him.
No, I didn't know. I've still got a really good relationship with Tom. So I think it. You've probably talked to him. I don't want to speak on his behalf. I think it's not just him. I think a lot of Kiwi coaches and Aussie coaches, whoever they may be, don't quite realise the differences, both culturally, skill-wise, physically, conditioning-wise. I think culturally is the biggest one.
Yeah.
Over in, from my experience in New Zealand, team culture-wise, it's all kind of player-led. The coaches are happy with that. They want us taking responsibility. They want us to be empowered. They want us to make the decisions, and they kind of just consultants effectively, and kind of steer us in the right direction and put their foot down when they need to.
Yeah,
and because everyone lives close together, it seems like the guys are a bit younger. I lived with five of the guys when I was at the Chiefs. You don't really need to, well, you spend a lot of time working on it, but it's just a bit different. And over here, I think we like being told a little bit more, like what to do.
Yeah.
Just give us clear instructions. If he wants to run through that brick wall off on the second phase, we'll do it. Just tell us. And we don't really... I can't speak for everyone. I can't speak for all teams at all. But just from my experiences, I think that's something that's just a bit different.
Yeah, if I could put my finger on it, and I'm trying to work out how to say this without sounding too disparaging. I guess what I'm trying to say is, when I was talking to other players about Irish that season, what they would say is, yeah, well, they get to the third phase and not entirely sure what to do. And I think what they meant by that is, you know, in a Super Rugby sense, you would get to your third phase and then the boys', skills and, it's not so much about patterned rugby then, it's about individual players. And I think that's where it kind of fell down. English lads want more structure, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think London Irish at that time, we were trying to play a game that's very similar to Wasps now.
Yeah.
But without the calibre of players across the squad.
Mm.
So... pretty much we've got a bloody good squad at Wasps, and we've got numerous guys who can slip into numerous roles,
yeah,
and carry them out well, but probably at Irish we lack that depth. So once we lost a couple of key guys, struggled to implement that plan where you're coming wide into the middle of the park, you're going out the back, then you're trying to get to the edge, and then you get round the edge. Instead we were getting caught a lot, and then we kind of lose structure and just run up our own arse. And there's probably a little bit the coach's naivety thinking that we could get away with playing that game.
Yeah.
We could get guys who've never done it before, even though it might be top international players, to run to the line and pull it back as though they're James Graham in the NRL.
Yeah.
Like you've got to play to guys' strengths, and sometimes you've got to cut your losses and realise, actually, lad, we're going to play 2-3 phases, we're going to box kick it, we're going to put them under massive pressure on D, and... we're just going to play a tighter game, or we're just going to go round the corner, we're just going to play off nine, whatever it is. Just if we don't get anywhere in three phases, we're just going to kick it and put massive pressure and make them make mistakes. And if you're going to go to Welford Road, if you're going to go to Sandy Park, if you're going to go to these places, sometimes you've got to accept the fact that a bonus point is not disaster.
Yeah, it's like a mentality. It's a whole new mentality.
Exactly. And then you come from Super Rugby where you don't have relegation. And you come for it around, and yeah, great. Yeah, you might lose, and you might lose a couple more than you should, but you're not facing relegation.
Yeah,
and that is a game changer.
Can I just say, I love you, James. I love you, James Graham reference. Then there's true rugby knowledge.
He's unreal,
isn't he?
He's unreal. Yeah, he's unreal.
Yeah, we do another rugby podcast from this studio for Rugby League, and we had him on as a guest. And to my mind, I think he might be one of the best rugby players to come from the British Isles of any code.
Yeah, I didn't really watch much. I don't watch much now, to be fair, but when I was in New Zealand, it's massive. So I used to watch a lot of NRL then, went to a few games. We were like, if we go to Brisbane to play the Reds, the Broncos will be playing Friday night. Go and watch that. So it's awesome to watch live.
It is, isn't it?
So any Union fan, go and watch some NRL live.
It often amazes me why it's not the biggest sport in the world, but it's just I don't know what happens
there. Origin, yeah. I mean, I saw Tio's comments the other day comparing that, well, nothing in Union's ever matched up to State of Origin. I can kind of agree with him. Not that I've played in any, but watching it on TV and understanding how much the Kiwis get into it.
Yeah.
The Aussies, so...
This is how sad I am. A few years ago, I used to book off time to watch State of Origin.
Yeah, that's pretty sad, mate.
Yeah, I should really grow up. Now, I am going to ask you one last question, but it is going to be a fairly detailed question.
Far away.
And I'll just give you a bit of background to this. So, on my other podcast, Egg Chasers, I get a lot of stick from Wasps fans who say that I hate Wasps. I really hate Wasps, allegedly. And the reason I get stick is because I say Wasps are not particularly... No, I don't... Yeah, I say... I'll be honest. I say they're not particularly well-coached. And what I mean by that is I don't think coaching is the most important thing at Wasps. I think the most important thing of Wasps is the quality of their players. And... the individual skill sets. In particular, I always highlight Danny Cipriani because I think he is probably the best attacking player in the Premiership. And when Wasps don't do well, it tends to correlate when Danny's not involved in the team. Is that a fair critique of Wasps, or am I massively off the point there?
I mean, tough one. I think Danny has got some mercurial touches that no one else can do, really. I mean, the way he does have a pretty unbelievable ability to get our attack humming.
Yeah.
And no doubt we miss him when he's not playing. Having said that, yeah, there's coaching. Like, we get coached. Like, I've learnt a lot at Wasps from coaches and from also some of the other players who are there. We've got some fantastic guys in the forward pack. Who really kind of lead the set piece stuff, and I've learned heaps. I think yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I was a different player, so I was absorbing everything in my earlier years.
Yeah,
and in terms of like the tight game, in terms of, I can only speak for myself. In terms of the mauling, scrummaging, the technicalities around that, and the line out, I'd say I've learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
At Wasps, I don't think you're really going to tell Danny now. I don't think you're really going to coach him as though you would coach a 21-year-old, as though you coach Connor, as though you coach Connor Eastgate, one of our academy team, or Jacob Umanga. Like, you're just not. Like, he sees the game differently. He understands it. He gets it. He just gets it. Yes, in that regard, probably not. You're not gonna, if you were gonna sit him down and talk through this, that, and the other, it wouldn't. It just, you don't need to do it, really. You just let him get him fit and let him play.
Yeah, I mean, I look at Wasps, and the reason that I think they play magnificent rugby at times is because you've got so many great individuals, and you don't play particularly structured stuff. Is what I keep on coming back to.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a pretty big structure in place. It's just that we've got options off that structure, so sometimes it may look unstructured, but it's actually all structured.
Yeah, it's
a weird one. So, like, where our options are, we're hitting the first one, we're hitting the second one, we're going out the back, we're going off the back straight off 10, or we're going off the back out of back forward, or we're going to the touchline. If we don't get to the touchline, we're going to go...
It's such a weird one.
Very planned, and it's all driven from our halfbacks. Yeah. So that's all Danny, that's all Jimmy, that's all Dan Robson and Joe Simpson. Like, they have because our halfbacks are so strong.
Yeah,
it has a massive impact on our structure, on attack, and also we've got some great ball playing 12s and 13s. That kind of skeleton gives you the ability to have a very effective attack.
Yeah, I mean, legitimately, one of the guys who continually is raised by people who've played with him, I've never interviewed the guy myself, but Kyle Eastman, I think there are about five guys that I've spoken to, and completely independently on an open question, who is the best player you played with? And they will say Kyle Eastmond, time and time again.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal player. And he's a great bloke as well. And I mean, so when I was in news, when I was at Chiefs at the time, 2014, and it was just before the England All Blacks game, first one, when Smith was our coach at the time at Chiefs. And we were just having a discussion around England side. And he was like, if I was going to play anyone, if they were going to beat the All Blacks, they had to play Carl Eastmond at 12. Because they said, if you put a big ball carrier at 12, all the All Blacks will do is just chop him down, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
You need someone with a threat in the second receiver. You need Kyle to kind of unlock the attack. And he was a massive, massive fan of him.
Yeah. I mean, if Wasps could just have kept Kyle and Danny on the same pitch for extended periods of time, I'm not entirely sure how he beat them. There again, Jimmy Gopith's pretty good at 12 too. So
yeah,
I mean, these are sort of options that Wasps, you know, have got to juggle, I guess.
Yeah, and that's when I talk back about the structure we had in place at Irish. That's the prime example of, you know, we can just slot Jimmy in wherever.
Yeah,
and not many teams have the ability to put someone of his standard.
Yeah, he's
slot him in.
Yeah, he is quite some player. It's a weird one, the old question, like, how structured are you? Because it's actually the structure that allows you to play the unstructured stuff, as you've already said. It's kind of like a bit of a dichotomy there.
Exactly.
Matt, you've been an absolutely awesome guest. I feel that we could carry on talking rugby for quite some time. But we're gonna call it a day because I've kept you on the phone for 50 minutes. Before you go, though, tell me about your blog. Where can we find it? What you're writing about?
Yeah, matt-simmons.passel.net. It's on my Instagram page, on LinkedIn, and Twitter. Big LinkedIn, as I get a lot of heat from the lads outside of rugby. You can't win. You either don't do anything and you don't get a job when you finish, or you do try and do stuff and then you get a lot of heat. So it's a lose-lose.
Tell me this, actually, what were you doing on Friday? Because I wanted to get back to that. You said you were working outside of rugby. That made me interested.
Oh yeah, I've got a couple of little ventures that I'm going to launch with some partners in the city in London in the coming months, which are all around trying to help athletes with a bit of a clearer pathway.
Oh nice.
That's taken up a lot of my energy at the moment outside of rugby, trying to keep that in
between the lines. Then, if you read your blog, you can kind of see a pattern about where that might go.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it's a lot of it with the transition. It's well publicised now. There's a lot of articles from ex-players and even current players talking about it. I think it's a lot of negativity. It's a lot of, you know, it's quite tough for current athletes, not just rugby players, to read, because you almost want to put your head in the sand. I don't want to deal with this stuff because I'm still in the prime of my playing careers. Hopefully I've got another 10 years, 8 years, whatever it is to go. I don't want to deal with this. So what a big thing for me is trying to raise some positivity around it. And actually, let's kind of realise all these transferables, and not just professional players, that, you know, amateur pub side players have. They're some of the attributes they offer and that they actually are bringing to their 9-to-5s currently. It's just a big one for me. And I just think we need to offer as much support as we can around helping guys make a smooth transition and all the all the variables that come with that, all, you know, from the mental health well-being side of things to the financial hits to whatever it is. I think if we can make that process as easy as possible, and it's win-win for everyone.
Do you know what I liken it to, being a professional athlete in, well, certainly in rugby, actually, because the money is good.
Good, don't get me wrong, but I mean, there's a bit of a misconception around that you think everyone's getting paid that top England
money.
I mean, a lot of guys who are doing it, you know, who could be making more money outside of rugby, and it's not football, it's not NFL, it's not NBA,
I kind of see it having, like, because the money in rugby for the average squad guy, you know, it's good, but it's not massive. It's almost like having your 30s in reverse. So, like,
100%.
Like, you've got this money now, which all of your mates from your school group probably don't. And as you get older, they sort of catch you up, and then all of a sudden, you've kind of got this drop, just as your mates are all, like, hitting the...
Exactly. And for numerous reasons. One, because you're competitive.
Yeah.
And there's a set, and there's an element of competition in that. Two, because you were always the one buying rounds when you were 18, 19, 20.
Yes.
When schoolmate, when you were on a decent academy contract or whatever, or you've just broken through and all your mates are at uni, skint. And now they're accountants, they're doctors, they're lawyers, and they're 32, 34, and they're making it rain, and you're about to fall off a cliff because you haven't put in the work, getting your plan in place and having a clear...
But, I mean, you simply can't tell 22-year-olds, you know, maximise your ISA allowance. It doesn't work.
No, and I mean, I could talk about this all day. We could do another blog just purely on this, but...
Yeah.
For this exact reason, lads put their head in the sand. And you can always... Yeah, I can hear them. I can hear mates just switching off as we speak, because they just don't want to talk about it. They don't want to know, and it's bloody terrifying.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree. However, there does seem to be a burgeoning trend of rugby players either coffee brands, biltong brands, or podcasts. That is the new one.
Yes, there are. Brad Weber and Michael Allardyce in New Zealand, former teammates, have just started one.
Coffee or biltong?
Podcast.
Oh, podcast. Oh,
you said... I thought you said
No, I said coffee, biltong, and podcasts. And sometimes all three.
Coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of current teammates who are venturing into that scene very shortly.
Is there?
Don't want to give anything away. Yeah, but some very well-known players are about to embark on
And you've got to remember that every other player is from a farming background, so biltong is always strong.
Exactly. There's some... I think Sam Smith, I think some of the lads went to like an event with him. He was talking earlier today, and I think they were speaking very highly of him and what he's done with Whalen's Yard. So,
Up
a second one in Birmingham. Yeah, something. This is what I mean, though. All the transferables, like, guys going on to have some incredibly successful second careers, and we've got to kind of speak a little bit more about those guys, and it's pretty inspiring stuff.
Mm. Well, I've got an idea, Matt. Why don't we do another podcast in the very, very near future, and we'll just focus on this alone?
Well, I don't know how many viewers we'll get.
You'll be surprised.
Pretty deep. Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, hey, there might be some listeners out there who can help out. Always looking for people who can offer some work experience or come in, have a chat with the lads, something the other.
Yeah,
open some doors for both. Win-win.
Right, well, thank you very, very much for coming on the show. Best of luck with the foot, and let's do that other podcast soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Cheers,
good one, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.